Yeah, man, it's going down. It's Donnie Houston Podcast. I am Donnie Houston. Check it out, man. We got a special guest today, man. Homie is doing his thing out here on the comedy circuit in the H, you know what I'm saying, and beyond. You know, he just packed out Cafe 4212, you know what I mean? Hey, man, Leroy the Third, what's going down,
what's
man?
What's up, man? What's going on?
What's the deal, baby?
Man, I'm in here at the Donnie Houston Show. That's what I'm doing.
Representing Mo City. I forgot to put that out there.
Oh, yeah, Mo City, Ridgegate, Texas, to be exact. There it is. 21 years.
Already. What's going down, man?
Man, a whole bunch of comedy, man. I'm trying to keep this consistency thing going. I've been in it a little bit over 8 years, 9 years next year. And what I've done, I can honestly start this. I'm starting to see stuff pan out and play out the way it's supposed to be. You know, I've been hearing, I say probably since COVID started, I started hearing, you know, people saying, I see you. But it was always, you know what I'm saying, I want to try to soak up what they saying and try to drill it into my ego just a little bit, but it never happened. So now I say about this year, I honestly start seeing an evolution in myself, and I really start seeing a change in evolution, man. So this year has been real good to me, man. I actually came out of retirement on doing shows. I hadn't did a comedy show for like 5 or 6 years. Actually, just
throwing, you mean putting on your own show,
producing from through and through. You know, I've been doing the open mics. I put on those shows, but those weren't 100% mine. So I say, man, you know what? I'm gonna go ahead and do it because I know what the logistics of it is. It can become stressful. But what I told myself, like, man, I'm 43 now. So what I got to do? I got to make sure I don't spread myself too thin. I can't stress myself out. I can't do everything last minute. Let me do this and that. I'm gonna do away with all the extra stuff. I'm gonna stick with the basics, and my basics should be awesome at this point to the outsiders. So that's exactly what I did, and I wanted to ultimately prove it to myself that I had this in me. So when I walked in there, I knew it was gonna be nice. I didn't know it was gonna be like that. So that was it right there. And ever since then, man, it's been nonstop, dog. Nonstop. I mean, it's been nonstop, but it's been nonstop in my mental. As far as I gotta keep this running.
Yeah. What you say you've been doing about 8 years? What inspired you to like comedy wise? You know what I'm saying?
Well, man, just like a lot of comics, man, we all in school were some type of class clown, acted out. You know what I'm saying? That's just what you do. Matter of fact, with me, I was so troubled in bad school shit. My old man used to he was a computer engineer. He used to make conduct sheets Monday through Friday, and I had to take them to my teacher and have each one of them sign off. That's how bad the motherfucker I was fucking terrible. So I would go in there, and it got to the point that I was like, man, I can just forge the teacher's name. And I started doing that shit. And then, of course, if you acting a fool, them grades start slipping. Then you get written up. But back then, they used to write you up and send the discipline slips home. But I got home before my parents, so guess what? The discipline slips is going in the gutter. So I don't know if it's it that exists down there, or whoever lived in that gutter or that bayou, know how bad I was. Because there's plenty of discipline slips, progress reports, all that shit. My old man be like, hey, Canessa and Tony say they got their report going progress, but where you at? But shit, they probably ain't put my grades in yet or some shit. So
why were you tripping so much?
I don't know. I think, well, I was diagnosed with ADHD back in, I think, 7th, 8th grade, but I'm pretty sure I had been having the shit. They just put a name
official.
Yeah. So what happened was I went from being hyper disruptive. I was always respectful. And then my parents, I remember we went to the psychiatrist. I'll never forget this shit. And I was acting a fool. And they said, well, we're going to put this nigga on something to slow his motherfucking ass down. It was called Ritalin back then. So I take the shit. So I'm in class. But what happened is I developed a OCD for certain things. Like I would be writing a paper. Back when I was in school, you had to write on the front and back on college ruled paper. So I can get to the back of the page and be at the bottom and fuck up on a word and basically tear that shit up and rewrite it again. So I developed a whole bunch of OCD with that shit too. But My grades went from straight F's and D's to straight B's and A's. So that Ritalin, man, now they, what's the shit they take nowadays? What's the shit the blue collar motherfuckers take? If they mind function.
Adderall.
Adderall, that's the shit. That's the same shit. That's the same shit. But the thing is, with my kids, like my oldest, he was suffering from ADHD. And then the thing is, back then, shit, you just get on your kid's ass for acting up. They go back to school, do the same shit. So with him, I was like, man, let me see what the real problem is instead of getting on his ass, you know what I'm saying, and see what kind of, you know, see what's really going on. But, you know, you just kind of open up that line of communication, and then eventually he kind of talk to you, and then he slow down. And a lot of times it's a lot of acting out as well. So I came up in the 80s, man, so you see a lot, even though you had both parents in the house, you still see a lot. You understand what I'm saying? So I think everything had a little part to play in it. As of right now, I don't think I'm ADHD. I'm more ADD. I can sit my ass down now. You know what I'm saying?
Man, okay. Well, man, tell me, you know, even before the comedy,
right?
The boys had a different type of situation going on.
Right. You know. I see where you're going.
You know, tell me a little bit about this. Because there was somebody put out a documentary.
Right.
I don't know who. I just remember somehow I came across a documentary about these kids who left school and went to go rob a bank. You know what I'm saying? Got caught up. And these niggas was from Mo City.
Right.
And the shit just tripped me out.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
So you actually seen the documentary?
I saw the documentary.
Okay.
I wish I could see it again. I was trying to find it, but I can't remember where
I saw it.
It
was on YouTube, Apple. It was on Netflix for a couple of years. Evolution of a Criminal.
Evolution of
a Criminal. Shout out Darius Clark Monroe. What's up, bro? 1997, January. Me and a couple dudes, we decided, let's go make it happen. So we did just that. And two of us got caught up for it. One of them ran his jawline.
Wait. So here's my thing.
What's up?
This was a random, we just gonna do this. Y'all hadn't been on, what were y'all doing prior leading? Like y'all wasn't hitting no, like what, you know what I'm saying? Cause this ain't no small time deal. Right. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, before that, I'm going to be honest with you. It was probably little stuff here and there. Nothing to the extent or nothing even remotely as close as that. I remember us watching, I believe it was Set It Off back in the day. And that kind of triggered some stuff too. That along with all the double disc Tupac albums. Parents, y'all listen to what your kids listen to. I'm telling you, because it does play a part. Music does play a part.
Music influence.
Yeah, it definitely does. Because when we actually got to the bank, we had second thoughts. So they both came back. I was driving. They both came back like, man, you know, I ain't feeling this. And I remember turning on the radio and they had some Tupac on. I can't remember what song it was, but it hyped it up and it went the fuck back in there. And the rest is fucking history. So that's what I'm saying. You got to always, I think a lot of times, I'm all over the place, but I think a lot of times parents be trying to be their kids' friend instead of being a parent. You ain't got to be a super strict motherfucker, but you fuck that friend shit. You know what I'm saying? Friends, you ain't got to, you don't feed your friends and pay all their fucking bills and your kids. But, I mean, that's what it was. We just said, fuck it. I don't think nothing really just led up to it. It was just this, and that. And I was saying, you know what? Fuck it. Yeah, so.
Okay, so tell me how y'all put this plan together. Break this whole shit down. Break me down.
Shit, I got to go back 20-some-odd years. Let me see.
Because this was so, it just tripped me out that something that, for one, that these kids would do it that weren't like career criminal, quote unquote. Right. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And the shit happened in Houston, Mo City, whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I was the oldest. I was 17. It was 16. Mm-hmm. So.
Y'all are just regular kids, really. Y'all ain't
Just nothing. Regular kids. One of the guys was my neighbor, stayed next door. Smart guy, made straight A's, well known. Then you had me, the class clown. Then you had the other guy, which is, you know, just a young kid trying to, I don't know, try to fit in. Trying to fit in or whatever. So we came up with this, and I remember God rest the dead, one of my best friends that passed away. We was basically just kind of recruiting. Hey, man, you know, asking about such and such. He said, okay, this is one guy. I said, okay. That fool, okay, that's the dude that be skipping school with us and shit. So not thinking you can't, and that's what I always tell people, man. Listen, I used to tell people that. You can't go from something, you can't go from nothing to a whole bunch of something and expect a person to keep that under wraps and quiet, especially a child. You know what I'm saying? So we was basically looking for somebody to get down that was about that. And just so happened this dude's name came up. And it ultimately just kind of backfired. You know what I'm saying? And for years I kind of held on to that resentment. All that, you know what I'm saying, that I got to get at this dude type shit. Until, you know, once I got older and started thinking and started having my own kids, you got to realize it ain't so, it's only so solid a person can be at 16. You know what I'm saying? When he pressed by professional adults, somewhere along the lines you're going to break. So, I mean, ultimately me and my homeboy that directed the movie, he's a filmmaker now. He studied under Spike Lee and everything, went to NYU. We the ones that had to go through the probation. We the ones that had to do prison time. This guy never did time or anything. The one that talked.
And he came and okay, take me through the whole thing of doing this shit. So y'all sit down, y'all put this plan together. Y'all say, why did y'all choose the bank? How that whole shit went down, you know what I'm saying?
So I really don't even remember how we chose that location. You know, when you young, you just used to what's in your vicinity. You know what I'm saying?
You know it's a bank right here.
You know it's a bank right there that's not too far. Mm-hmm. Cause we don't know at that time, shit, we 16, 17 years old. We oblivious to the north side. So we gonna do what's furthest yet not too far from it. You understand what I'm saying? So I remember me and my homeboy just kind of sitting around. He said, yo, I think I got a prospect. So we went by there and I remember he said he was gonna go in there and ask about opening a checking account. So I went in there with them. And I remember they had a box camera. You walk in the door, and it was an old school box camera above the door. And I shit you not, it was a box camera. That was the weirdest shit. So I was like, okay, that's the only camera I see. So we talked about it. I'm like, shit, all right, let's plan it out. So I remember when it came time for that day for them to go in there, we had spray paint, black spray paint, kind of like on the movies. So we went in there. I want to say we had walkies or we didn't use them. I can't remember. But I don't even remember if the camera got sprayed. But one of the main things I remember is I told the dude, I was like, yo, don't put no shells in that shotgun. We don't need that. And I wound up finding out later on that he did, in fact, put shells in this. So God, Jesus Christ. Thank God he didn't. Thank God nothing happened to where it was a shootout that occurred in there, because it would have been much more than a robbery. It would have been a murder, some capital murder type shit. Mm-hmm. So we went through it. Let me rewind a little bit. Before we went there, that was around the time people was having bomb threats in schools. So what we did was stopped at a payphone. And we made a call to the police department in Stafford saying that it's a suspicious package outside of an elementary school. I can't remember what school it was. So what that was in set in place to do is what to deter the police over there.
They already out of the way
while we go do what we got to do and then slow down. So after we did everything, I went right back by the actual payphone that we made the call from. It was a side street. We just passed right by him, slow as hell. And by the time I got there, shit you not, it was probably maybe 10, 12 cop cars right there. So I just passed right by him, going the speed limit. Everybody was reclined, laying back in the seat and shit. And I'm be honest with you, I've never, when they say anxiety, your adrenaline rushing, your nervousness and all that shit, this was like to the moon. I've never felt like this.
This is after y'all ride it back.
This is after.
How do y'all go in there? Y'all just what, slide the note or what y'all do?
Well, I was a driver. So what they did, they got close the first time they turned around. Second time they went in there and they announced what it is. And so after that, ain't nothing else to be said. So the thing was, we don't want nothing in the till, nothing in the drawers. We want straight safe, because we know either you got the die or the explosion, the tracker or something in them tills. We don't want none of that. We want shit straight out the safe. So disregard all that shit. So they went straight to the safe. And I can't remember how much it was. I know it was over $100,000+. Yeah.
They walked out of there with.
Yeah.
Okay, so boom, y'all leave, y'all in the car, y'all pass the payphone, boom.
Right. So after that, we stay over there, and I'm from Ridgegate. So we went back to the old part of Mo City, and it was a park back there. I don't even think it exists. They probably put houses on it. And we got there, and even back then, what I never understood, how people hold on to shit. I never understood that shit. Even as an adult, I was thinking like that as a kid. Why are you holding on to these shoes and this jacket and everything else? First thing we did was discard everything down a gutter. If y'all know what a gutter is, a storm drain. We threw everything down there, and we went back to school. So at this time, you're so nervous and paranoid, like extremely paranoid. So we know we got all this money in this car. My thing is, I'm not leaving my half in here. Why are you leaving my half in here? So that paranoia and that feeling like somebody's going to fuck over one another. I say, let me stuff. I had I think it was a leather bomber jacket or something like that. I'm stuffing what I can in that motherfucker. I'm going to hold mine. So I go back to class in the state of paranoia being in class. I was in Woodshop. Never forget that shit. Everybody come through the door. I'm tripping. I'm spazzing the fuck out at this time, right? So went to school. Then after that, we went home. So you still got that paranoia. And I'm going to be honest with you. That state of paranoia, that level of paranoia, it really ain't even worth that bread. Because it damn near drive your ass crazy. Yeah.
Damn, okay, so boom, go ahead.
I mean, what else you want?
No, I mean, you're going. You go there as a paranoid. Okay, boom.
Okay, yeah. So we get back to the house, so we kind of laying low. Old buddy, he go his way. He stayed in the front part of Missouri City. My homeboy stayed next door. So we kind of going back and forth, but just really laying low. And then I start hearing certain shit about the dude starting to splurge, starting to talk. So at this point, I'm like, yo, what is he doing? And that's when I start, that's my concept. If you don't never do anything that involves money with a person that ain't never had shit. Because you go from having nothing to a whole lot of something, it's going to show. You may not even say nothing, but it's going to show. So I kind of faulted that for myself. A lot of people don't think of those certain situations and shit like that. So fast forward through that, it may have been a month, and then you start hearing whispers in school and shit. Hey, man, I heard this. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Then that paranoia started coming by. And I remember one time I don't think I've ever told this story in public. I was actually walking back from the house, from school, and I used to cut through the neighborhood, go through a vacant house, come out on the fence on Court Road. And it was two chicks, had a car stalled out with their hood up. So I'm walking, I'm looking. At this time, I'm carrying a pistol to school. So they kind of flag, hey, can you look at our car? Like, what the hell? Ain't shit I could do. I'm just coming back from school. I don't know shit about no damn engines. I said, I don't know. They said, well, can we use your phone? I said, I'm going to go get the car. The phone, y'all stay right there. At this time, I'm tripping. So I go in the house, and I'm kind of looking out the blinds and shit, trying to see if they still there. I said, all right, well, let me go get the car. This phone. Back then, it was the car. They pull up the antenna type shit. And right before I was going to go back out there, I looked out again. And they kind of shrugged their shoulders and closed the hood, jumped in that bitch and burned off. So it was another time I had a situation. I ain't gonna speak on that too much. But yeah, I had some niggas try to do some shit behind some bread. And I had to make them get away. So that was another blessing from my grandmother, my praying grandmother. She had been deceased at that time. So I know we all, we can't, we really can't put on the way we are or try to give full blessings to our parents for the way we've been raised or the way we are or how we've survived or anything like that. You got to put it on to the grandparents. If we went for praying grandparents, because our parents was probably in Oasis or fucking Carol's or something the whole time. So that was just another blessing right there, man. So, man, it was a whole ordeal. So anyways, my homeboy wound up getting caught up behind the shit, right? And he ended up getting...
Because the dude talked.
I mean, it may have been an accumulation of stuff, but ultimately it's because the guy talked. So he was going through his shit and he was letting me know, like, yo, they asking this and that. You ain't got to worry about nothing on this end. You know what I'm saying? Which was solid. I said, okay, cool. So at this time, you know, my parents start getting word of what's going on because my mama drove buses for the high school. So I remember coming home from school. Matter of fact, I was like, man, you know what? You know, you got some money in your pocket. I ain't going home no more. I'm 17, nigga. My mama paid me 911. So, you know what? I ain't coming like the dude on Harlem Nights. Hey, yo, mama, I'm not coming home no more. You know, I got these couple thousand in my pocket. Anyway, so we went to the Galleria. I remember that night. Went to the Galleria, got my black ass on the ice skating rink. Caught a concussion. First and only time. Slipped, bam. And I remember they had like a Bennigan's or a Chili's in there. I'm in a bit of Bennigan's or Chili's. I'm all clouded and shit. I'm like, man, look, I'm gonna go back to your crib. I'm gonna go by my house tomorrow, get some things. I ain't going back to the house. You know, I'm really thinking big headed. So I go to the crib. Parents call me in the room. I'm like, man, what's up? So, you got something to tell us? Nah, what you talking about? Then my mama reached behind. I had all my money in a tube sock. I had it stuffed in rolls. Heart just dropped. How the fuck you find this? So kids, don't think you can hide anything in your parents' house because they know every nook and cranny, you they fucking child. So what I used to do is pull my drawer out. Then you reach in like up under here. How the fuck? I have the slightest idea to this fucking day. I'm gonna ask my mama how the fuck they find this shit out. So up until that point in 1997, my old man was like, yo, we got to get rid of this. We got to get rid of that. Nigga putting blankets on the windows and shit. I remember I had a pair of Old Navy wingtip shoes. I'll never forget this shit. That's the only goddamn shoe you got to look broke. Look like you're dirty. I was wearing the same pair of fucking shoes. And I remember I had an Old Navy blue shirt. I'll never forget. It was a polo style shirt. It was a V-neck right here with the collar. I'll never forget that shit because I had to wear the shit all the time. And I had a Kohan belt. But, man, listen, this shit was crazy as hell. Then I went to Progressive to get my GED. Shout out Progressive High School. Hater. She went to work. That's trash. Anyways, so they was like, man, you know they're going to come for you eventually. I ain't worried about that. So I'm trying to get my mind right, get my GED focused and go to college. So I remember the assistant principal saying, hey, Leroy, Steph, I need to talk to you. No problem. Yes, ma'am. And back then, you had to take shirts in. Like, yes, ma'am. Say, you Leroy can't. Say, why? You need to turn around. You got the right to remain. So I say, So they took me to Stafford Police Department. Never forget this shit. So I'm in there. They take my shoestrings and shit. Like, I'm going to kill myself. And they say, you got a phone call. I say, who the fuck is this? So I get on the phone. It's my lawyer. God bless the dead, Miss Bernadette John Lewis, from my lawyer from 1997 up until what, about 5-6 years ago. She passed away 5 years ago, about 5 years ago. Big lady, she had to be like 450 pounds, ghetto as hell. She's like, hey, this is your lawyer. Your parents got hired me to represent you. Don't tell them motherfuckers nothing. Don't sign shit, just like that. I said, okay. I'm on some real shit then, some mob shit. So they run me into the interrogation room. I say, we state your name, is your name, state your name. Is your name such and such?
Say, shit, y'all pulled me in this motherfucker. I don't know what my name is. You tell me. And they looked at each other. Phone rung again. You got to tell them your damn name at least. Don't be too damn crazy. I say, well, you told me not to say a motherfucking thing. So automatically went on. I bonded out. They put me on ankle monitor. I was going through all that shit. Then they agreed to put me on probation.
They took the money and all that shit or what?
The shit, I'm going to be honest with you. The rest of the money, basically, you do what you do with some of the money, and the rest of the money went towards lawyer fees to fight the fucking case that I got in the first place. So basically, I robbed a bank for the experience. Dumb ass shit. I hate people. So I got put on probation because I was a kid, but I was still served as an adult. So I had to do, I think at 17, I think I maybe 3 months in county, then come back on probation, 7 years. But the thing is, you can't take a motherfucker that's been doing crazy shit, robbing, doing all kind of other shit, then put him on probation at 17 and think he gonna straighten up. So I violated like 4 times over the course of 5 years. Violate. And I remember the judge in Fort Bend told me, he's like, man, look, before I reinstate you this time, that was the third time. He said, look out that window. You see that tree right there at the curb? I'm looking. Like, he said, you don't see that tree? I'm saying, no, sir, I don't see no tree. If you violate again, by the time you get out, it's going to be a full-grown fucking tree right there. I say, God damn. So, of course, what I did was violate again, and I went before the same fucking judge. And he knew exactly who I was. So they was trying to, they gave me a chance to sign for 5 years. So I'm on that crate now. I ain't signing for shit. Fuck what you talking about, nigga. I listen to Screw. Everything he screwed down and say, nigga, we ain't copping, please. Ignorant than a motherfucker, right? But nah, I just wasn't signing for shit. So when I went to court, they tried to give me 15 years. So at this point, I'm like, yo, alright. Whatever. So I ultimately wound up getting 7 years. So they gave me 7 years aggravated time. And anybody ever did aggravated time, or what they used to call back then, I don't even know if they still have 3G. That means you have to do half before you even think about making parole. So I know when I got the time, I was like, well, shit, I got to do 7 years. I didn't know how that went. But then they said, nah, you ain't got to do 7 flat unless you fucking up. They said, you have to do 3.5 before you even think about seeing parole. So, I mean, you go down there, you go through basically you treat it how you carry yourself, of course. But you go through that depression shit because I had a newborn. My son was like 5 months old when I got locked up. Then you thinking about your gal fucking another nigga. You just laying in the bunk. I got egg time, I can't get a job. I'm in the county a year. These niggas getting on my motherfucking nerve, lying like a motherfucker. I'm thinking I gotta do 7. So all that is what formed and made my ass click. Like, yo, what the fuck am I doing? This shit is retarded. So I wound up doing right at 4 years. And I'll be honest with you, man. Back then, that's probably the best thing that could have happened to me. Hmm. It ultimately saved my fucking life.
Hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Hmm. Man, so then you jump out. So how long is it between you getting out and deciding to do comedy?
Got out in 2000, December 8th, 2004. I started doing comedy, let's say 9 years ago.
Oh, a little minute.
Yeah, so I had a little minute. So when I got out, I was a family man. I had another child, I was married. And he did that for about 9 years. And after that, you know, I just kept pushing on the comedy, But like I said, I met this guy outside of Third Ward. I was coming out of D-Bar back when it was dialing. And I said, man, we got the barbecue, man. I'm going to go grab something right quick. So while they was making my sandwich, they made y'all catch like comedy. Yeah, man, they been saying I didn't need to do comedy since I was a kid. He said, well, I got an open mic. I do, I think it was South Park somewhere. I was like, all right, cool. So I went by there for like 3 weeks. On that third week, God Bless the Dead, Big Juice. I seem like everybody else impactful in my life is deceased now. So I went at First time, I couldn't imagine getting on stage. That just wasn't anything I was even thinking about doing. Second time, same thing. Third time I went, it had to be like 7-8 people in the building. He had everybody saying my name when he called me up there. So I was like, all right, well, I might as well go up there. So I went up there. I said a joke about raising little boys. How some boys, in my opinion, tend to have different mannerisms. You know what I'm saying? Because of the lack of proper posture correction. So I said, I came home from work one day, my son's sitting on the couch like this, watching Nickelodeon. I said, sit your ass up, ain't no boy, nigga, you a girl or boy, ain't no boy sit like that. So I think a lot of times it comes from the lack of proper posture correction. So I got a laugh. I don't know if it was a call for a laugh, but I was like, who was that over there? And I was just hooked. I was like, yo, this is dope. He's actually laughing at me. And I don't even know this dude. After that, I was like, man, let me go ahead and talk about some old shit. And I was like, man, this is nice. It makes me feel good. It became therapeutic. So I was like, okay, the stress I was dealing with, you know, with day-to-day life, I was able to get up on stage and project that and just let that stress off, just like going into the gym. So it became a norm to me and addictive to where I was spending a lot of time doing it. You know what I'm saying? And then, like, me coming up in comedy, I didn't have a lot of people kind of big broing and giving me the game. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to comedian Grossman and Blame the Comet. And shout out to Ali Sadiq for giving me my first major room at the Duck Off. It wasn't really major, but he gave me my first room. I rented for like 4 years, 4.5 years. Shout out to Duck Off. And I ran that for about 4 years. But who gave me the game was comedian Grossman. You know, I could call Ali. We both Libras. We both paroled out of the same unit, actually. So when we talk on the phone, it's like, so, yeah. How's the family? Family's good. How's your family? All right, man. God bless you. I'll see you later. But he's always, I remember he used to do Diallo's in Third Ward. And you being there, you nervous as hell. You want to go up, but you ain't tripping if you don't go up. So I'm Leroy the Third, so Ali get off stage and he, you know, you next. I'm like, all right, cool. So you, shit, okay, I'm next. I'm like, oh, fuck. And he'll get up there after the comic and got off stage. So he finna, you know, he do a joke or two. And he'll go into that. All right, well, I finna bring up the next comic. I read for the next comic. So, yeah, shit, he finna call my name. Heart beating out your chest. All right. Y'all already clapping. Y'all already clapping. Y'all give it up for Titus Wilson. He called somebody else up. So you're like, oh, man, this is just too much on my mental. You know what I'm saying? It's too much on my mental. And then eventually, he said, all right, you next. I said, all right, either he going to do it or he don't. He going to fuck with me. So he said, all right. And he looked at me. Y'all give it up for Leroy Jr. I said, first of all, it's Leroy the Third. But you know what I'm saying? Ever since then we sat down. And we had a lot in common. And the thing I respect about him, that he's aggressive. You know what I'm saying? Where he feels he needs to be aggressive. You going to respect him. He's going to make you respect him. Thing I like about Grossman's like a big bro. I could talk to him about life shit when it comes to the comedy, and I could talk to him about comedy. And he always have me hosting like his birthday shows or whatever. So I've gained a lot of exposure on that as well. But and then shout out Blame the Comet. You heard of Blame the Comet?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he a beast too. Get out there and shoot the club up at the end. But those three fellas, they really kind of paved the way. Well, excuse me, gave me a lot of advice. So I was like, all right, well, I don't want to have to go to somebody's room and have to wait to be called upon. Let me start my own room. So I started at a strip club. I mean, it's tore down now. I'm talking about it. This is the place where strippers went to die. This wasn't no Onyx. This wasn't no shit. Stripper come talk. Like, hold on, bitch. I ain't calling on you. Go back over there. I'm talking about the bitches with the glitter lotion on their chest. And they gave me a side room, and I had a little Bluetooth, you know, the speakers you can buy from Fiesta, have all the flashing lights and shit. And I'll Bluetooth my phone. So I'll be like, yeah, all right, coming to stage. Y'all give it up for such and such. Boop. And I turn the music on. I had no DJ or nothing. Then you see a roach or two crawl by and shit. You know, it was crazy as hell. So I did it over there, but I wasn't even getting paid. They gave me a bar tab. So I remember they'll give me a $100 bar tab, and at the end of the night I might have $55 left. And you know what a nigga gonna do? Man, I'm gonna drink all this shit. And I fuck around, get home, wreck my goddamn car. And never fuck. So it was just a whole learning process. But I think the biggest, when it really started kind of showing light at the end of the tunnel, was probably the duck off. And I was able to do that, like I was saying, like 4+ years. And I actually was able to rub shoulders with, you know, some people that was coming in town. Shout out nephew Tommy. And I built some very long-lasting relationships out of there with comics. And then, of course, they had to, unfortunately, they had to shut down, just like all businesses come to an end eventually, some sooner than others. From there, I went to a couple of different spaces in Third Ward. And then, where I wound up going after that? I think it was the Main Street? No? No, I went to Swagger. I went to Swagger. Then COVID came. So they pulled a plug on that. So Main Street Lounge was still open. That's the old Maxwell's. Mm-hmm. So I ran that for like 2.5 years, man. Shout out to AB. Main Street Lounge, you got Prime 44 on the north side in Greens Point. If you're going by there, make sure your doors is locked, because you're going in your shit. But I ran there for like 2.5 years, and that was dope. I was able to rub shoulders with a lot of celebrities coming through there, getting my name out. And I started building more of a fan base opposed to the duck off. I had supporters. So when I got to Main Street, I was building fan base, and then my supporters was coming in, so it was mixed in. So I call them all supporters now. So moved around a couple other places, you know, don't have to mention those. Then I went back to Swagger. So me going back to Swagger was like, then it's like going back home. So other than that,
yeah, that's Swagger. That's every Tuesday.
That's every Tuesday live at Swagger, 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Y'all make sure y'all pull up. But other than that, I have my bookings, and you mentioned the 4212 earlier. Like I said, man, I knew it was gonna be crazy, but I didn't know it was gonna be like that. And my phone been nonstop. I'm gonna be honest with you, my nonstop. They want me to do 4212 off me a nice deal. They say you can do whatever the hell you want, and we break you off at the bar type shit. So I'm like, yeah, okay. But the thing about me is I'm a perfectionist. I'm always trying to outdo the last thing. I don't want, like I was saying earlier, I developed OCD. It still kind of sticks with me. So I was probably the first one to do comedy in First Colony Mall at the middle Spoon. They wanted me back over there a few times, but I had already did that. I wanted to outdo that. So I had backed up from doing shows, like I said, by 5-6 years. So now I'm trying to see how can I outdo the birthday I just had next year. So I'm already working on that. So shit, it's just all about growth for me right now. And consistency.
That's what it is,
yeah.
Man. That's what it is, man. I appreciate you coming through, man.
Shit, straight up, man. I appreciate you having me, man.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure. I mean, we had been, you know, talked, you know, loosely, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like I say, when I started coming out, checking out the spots with my boy Chakeem, man. I was
right.
Like, oh, okay, Leroy the Third. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we got to make that happen. So,
yeah, he just started, man. Shout out my boy Shakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah, man.
Good guy. Been working at Domino 32 years. Yeah. But hey, that nigga's a grinder, and he a teacher.
He ain't no teacher no more.
He'll be back.
Nah, he ain't gonna be back.
He ain't gonna be back. Okay, fuck it. Good guy.
Chakeem Olajuwon, man. Y'all look out for him, man. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, man, Leroy the Third, man. Your social media. You want your social media?
Oh yeah, for sure. Y'all can find me on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. I don't really fuck with the TikTok. But also on YouTube, Leroy the Third, that's LeroyThird. Oh, and I definitely got to plug my hashtag, I hate people shirts. If you've been in Houston, I'm pretty sure you done seen them or passed by. I have the hashtag, I hate people, professional shit talker, and the fuck. It's spelled T-H-A-F-U-Q question mark exclamation. And all my shirts are public friendly. And the meaning of my shirt is I love people to death. I just hate the ways of ignorant motherfuckers. So you can put your own meaning on the motherfucker. Y'all get at me. Leroy the Third. All the custom shirts and all that shit. And I was going to bring you one. What you, a large?
XL.
XL? Okay. Okay.
Yeah. All right, that's what it is, man. Hey, man, it's Donnie's podcast. Leroy the Third. Hey, man, we up out of here.